I'll just begin with one note on last week's topic of nails. I neglected to mention one point in our last year, and that is that the baseline assumption is whatever we talk about nails applies equally to fingernails as well as to toenails. That's the Purush in the Ravan that the Shach quoted. However, there is a Chamudi Daniel that the Piskei Tshuva is Mitzayin in Sifkat and Yud. It would suggest that maybe there's a difference between fingernails and toenails, at least on the B'di'evid level, that even though L'chachila, whatever our fingernail policy is, applies to toenails as well, as far as L'chachila cutting as short as possible. But B'di'evid, if a woman didn't cut her toenails, somebody that didn't suggest maybe there's more room to be makel B'di'evid. Number one, if she knows that it was clean, not to require another tefillah. And maybe even if it wasn't clean, not to require another tefillah, because people tend to be less machbid about dirt in toenails as they do about dirt in fingernails. The Aruch HaShulchan notes, writes in Os Memchas, he thinks this is correct in principle, but he leaves it as a tzarachi in l'maisa, whether you should rely on this practically. Mishnah Brura in Simon Shin Mem, there's a long bear halacha there. Shin Mem, bear halacha, dear Masa Lachai. And Mishabru assumes the halacha that this Chamudi Daniel is relevant in the Friday night tefillah situation. That even though the Mishabru himself assumes, as we know to like the Shach, that if a woman finds herself at a Friday night tefillah not having cut her fingernails, she should find a Nachris to cut the nails for her. And if enough is unavailable, then postpone the tefillah, as opposed to the Taz's condition that just make sure they're clean and go in as is. So the Mishabura says, when it comes to toenails, then you lechachila rely on the Taz. There's no need to, you shouldn't look for nachris, just make sure that they're clean, and then you can go to the mikvah as is. The Mishabura assumes, even if we wouldn't necessarily, he doesn't take a stance on whether he would invoke the Chamudi Daniel in a regular situation where B'di'evit, she went to the mikvah without having cut her toenails, but the Mishnah Berurah does invoke the Chamudi Daniel in the Friday night situation to tell you that there's no need to look for an achris in that scenario. In the Shari Tefillah, he quotes from Eliyahu Yashiv in Siman Kaf Aleph Osaya that if it's a woman that walks around with her toes exposed, in that kind of a culture, so then the Chamudi Daniel presumably wouldn't apply in that situation, or he's talking about wearing in any situation in which the toes are visible, then maybe this Chamudi Daniel wouldn't apply because there a woman would be makpedis on dirt in her toenail. So it sounds like Chamudi Daniel may be relevant in certain contexts as a something to rely on in a video of a situation, even though probably most poskim would say that she should go to the mikvah again if she discovers after coming out of the mikvah that the toenails weren't cut, to cut them and then go to the mikvah again. Okay, so let's move on to talk about chatzitzos in teeth. So we already had noted the general machlokas we showed him about beis hasarim, where the requirement of rather be a smayim beis hasarim is a din d'oraisa din d'rabbanan machlokas tosos in the chachmei svard. Here on Samach Vav and Kedushin on Daf Cafe. And we noted the position of the Ravid, which is reflected in Shulchan Aruch in Sif Cafe, that the requirement of the Memer of Rava that a woman should be Madicha Beis Hasarim prior to Tzvila, the Ravid assumed that's a Lichachila. But if a woman went to the mikvah not having rinsed out her beis hasarim and discovered after the fact that there was no davar chotzeitz, then there's no need to redo the tefillah. And that ravid, as we'll talk about a little bit later, is reflected in Tifkaf Hei here in Shulchan Aruch, as opposed to the Ravan, who presents Rava as being an Eitz Tova, but not even a din. Sorry, the Ravan who presents the din of Rav as being a din, and not just an Eitz HaTov, not just a lechachila, but an actual chiyuv. So we'll come back to this in the context of Sif Kaf Hei a little bit later. But the application we'll talk about now is the status of chatzitz and teeth, and as we've referenced earlier, what the Gemara has in Samach Vav and Beis the ma'isa b'shalchasa shereb yishetavu v'alsa v'nimsala etzem toseit bein shinaha, that Shifkasa Sharabi went to the mikvah, and after the fact she noticed that there was a bone wedge between her teeth, but Tzvicha Rebbe, Tzvila Charis Rebbe, required her to go to the mikvah again. The Meiri writes over here, Mitoch kach, ani mora uba, shebasar shebasoch hashinayim, ein derech lahakbid alav, kol kach, ve'eno potseit. So the Meiri says that the Maisa Shachasa Shrebi Zak Etzem, one could distinguish between Etzem and Basar, that Etzem is Chotzeitz, but Basar is not Chotzeitz. And he says that's in distinction to the position of Gedolei HaMefarshim, who disagree. Gedolei HaMefarshim is a Ravid, that's a Ravid in Bali Nefesh, who doesn't distinguish between Basar and Etzem. And that's the Smag that the Beis Yosef quotes as well. Smag writes, in Nimsa, Benei, and Basar, O Piruin, Kotetim. The Miri himself thinks that Etzem is Dafka, Etzem is Lafuke Basar, Etzem is Sotse, people are Makbid on an Etzem, Bena Shinayim, but people are not Makbid on Basar, Bena Shinayim. And the Miri says this is against Rivid, and it's also the Smag, that women are also Makbidos about Basar, Bena Shinayim, and not just Etzem, Ben Ha Shinayim. Rav Avadya thinks that even though in most Rishonim you don't find any such distinction between Basar and Etzem, but he thinks that at least the Bidi Eved, there is what to rely on, because in principle he thinks that there should be a Chiluk, and he quotes the Marsham like that, he quotes the Maram, La Halacha, that there is such a distinction between Basar and Etzem, like the Meiri. But the Mechaber Paskins over here, based on the Maisa of Shalchaso Shel Rebbe in Sifkaf Dalid, Tzvicha Lach Chotz Shineha Shelo Yehei Behem Davar Chotzeitz, that you have to make sure to plead your teeth in advance of a tefillah to make sure that there's no Davar Chotzeitz there, no distinction between Etzem and Basar. She'im Tavla V'nim Sashim Davar Davik Behem Lo Asala Tefillah, because if a woman went to the mikvah and there was something that is Bein Shineha, that's considered a Kepeda, and Lo Alsa Tvila. Then the Mechaber writes, V'yesh no hagos, Shelo lechel basar b'yom lecht on the Beis HaTvila, Mimnei shum nichnas Bein HaShinayim yoser mimachal acher. There's a minog not to eat meat on the day of Tvila, because meat can more easily get stuck Bein HaShinayim. Even though they're going to clean their teeth out before the tefillah, so this minhag is recorded by the Rush in the end of Hilchos Nida. The Rush writes, this is the practice of Benos Yisrael, Nati Basar B'yom HaTefillah, before going to the mikvah. The Rush says he observed that women did this, and he was supportive of this minhag. So the way it's formulated in the Rush, the way it's formulated in Shulchan Aruch, we single out basar as being something that tends to get stuck between the teeth, and therefore minhag developed that women would not eat basar biyom hatvila. Rabbi Morgenstern points out, page Shin Nun Vav, he says, it's a Dabar Pasha, that this shouldn't be limited to basar, it applies to basar taima. Any type of food that's easily going to get wedged between the teeth should be avoided on yom tvila. He singles out corn and popcorn as examples of things that tend to get caught between your teeth, aside from meat. Rav Neubert, in his old Sara Perek Vav, but no Yud Beis, is unsure about that. He leaves that as a Tzarachian, whether in fact that's true, that the minna should extend to other things that are hard to get out of your teeth. But it sounds like the consensus of Poskim is that you should avoid, it's not necessarily part of the formal minna, but you should avoid eating things that are going to more easily get stuck between your teeth. Yeah.
You're going to floss very well before you feel up.
Right.
You just have to not going to eat other things on that day.
So, halacha, yes. Rav Schachter has used in the past kind of halacha lola maisa maybe not. Would you say that if there's a minhag that develops because of a specific reason and the reason doesn't apply anymore, maybe you shouldn't be bound by following that minhag? So I've heard Rosh Hashanah make that observation, as you're saying, Gabe, but I don't think even Rosh Hashanah after that observation would say halacha l'maisa that you should abandon the minhag. I'm just kind of wondering whether it's as formally required.
But would it be at least a reason to like limit the minhag to basar? I mean, other things which could get guaranteed, but if you're going to fall off.
Yeah, I hear, meaning I could hear you saying that. But I think, you know, common practice, again, we'll talk in a few moments about exceptions, but common practice is still lefachil, avoid things that will easily get stuck with tunic divayah. I think we were saying may be correct on some level that if there's no formal minhag beyond basar and they'll easily get it out, so maybe it's less of a concern.
Is there like a list of things that they should need?
Is there a list? I'm not aware of a list.
It's a nonsense.
Yeah, whatever you know typically would get stuck between your teeth. But formally speaking, the minhag applies to basar. Now, the Gon is Mitzayin over here in Sifkatan Kaf Beis. Gemara in Fulin. Kotei. Achal Basar Asar Lechol Gmina. Perish Rambam. Mishum Shenishar Basar Ben Hashinayim. So the Gon is Mitzayin, that din, that you have to wait between eating meat and eating milk, and he quotes the Rambam's time for that din because we're worried about basar bein hashinayim. So the Shari Tefila points out, Simon Lamed Aleph, what the Gaon is saying is that just as the Rambam explains the reason for hamtana between basar falav is because of a concern of basar bein hashinayim, because you're not going to be able to get out the basar so easily. So hu adin, this minhag, when it comes to leil tefillah, is based on the same idea that you can't easily get the meat out of your teeth, and therefore the minhag developed not to eat meat the day of tefillah. Yeah.
That almost became like a standby.
Ah, good. Sort. So the mechaber to Rav Neuwirth. Rav Neuwirth raises that as a tzarachi, and also, if that's the case, according to the Gon, then it should come out that it should only be us, or the minhag should only apply within 6 hours of tefillah. So if you're going to the mikvah at 8 o'clock at night, then you could have a fleishig lunch. Right? That's what you're saying.
For the Dutch people, you know, only 1 hour.
Right.
You know?
Okay.
All of a sudden, yeah.
Right. So Rav Neuwirth suggests this. He leaves it as a tzarachi on the Dina, but he knows that the Darkei Tshuva is mefurish not the way. Darkei Tshuva is a cut and pay. Writes the Feirish that the entire day is aser based on this minhag, and it's not limited to 6 hours. The Shari Tefillah also points out that the minhag should apply across the board to all kinds of basar, even if it's the type of basar that isn't going to get stuck between your teeth. Not all meat is the same. So even if it's ground meat or something that's a softer consistency that's not going to get stuck between your teeth in any significant way. But he says still there's a low plug within the minhag. The minhag is basar applies across the board. Anyway, so Shlomo Zalman was masking to that point that the minhag applies across the board to all forms of basar. Yeah.
And I'm saying that you should need to wait 6 hours for meat and milk is because there might be meat still stuck in your teeth, but right. After 6 hours, it's not going to be there anymore. Is that right. 6 hours is bought off?
No, it's not going to be there anymore. Then any meat that gets stuck is...
It comes out on its own within 6 hours, I guess.
Yeah. Okay, so then there's a second minhag in the rush that the Rama has here, the Mechaber doesn't quote, the Eila Lechol Beina Rechitza Litvila, that not only should a woman not eat meat the day of the tefillah, but a woman shouldn't eat anything between the chafifa and the tefillah. The second minhag, once you do the chafifa, so then you shouldn't eat any meat before the tefillah. And that's also in the rush. Says the Taz, Sifkatan Kaf Hei, this is going on minhag one in the mechaber, not eating meat beyom tefillah. Upashut, Sha'im lo naga kain ain tzvich la'akev etzil mishvot ezer dam akev. It's a minig lachachila. But even if a woman by mistake violated the minig and ate meat, as long as she cleans out her teeth well and is sure that there's no meat left, there's no chatzitza, we don't tell her not to go to the mitzvah just because she violated the minig. U'b'shabbos v'yantiv ha-minig she'ochlin basar. And on Shabbos v'yantiv, the minig is how we do eat meat. If a woman has a tefillah mosei Shabbos, we don't tell her she can't have challah in Shabbos afternoon. The minig is, then you do eat basar. Rakshet tizar l'nakir b'yozer afrikan. As long as she makes sure to floss her teeth, to clean her teeth properly afterwards. That's parenthetically about floss. Floss sometimes is yes, as far as I say that, because if you tend to get pieces of floss stuck between your teeth when you floss, then it can make things worse than not flossing. So, you know, people have to know what their track record is with dental floss, but for some women, dental floss is not a good idea, and then you just have to rely on a toothpick or brushing the teeth or whatever other means of getting stuff out of the teeth. Yeah.
I mentioned oath also, because the minimum applies to oath in general.
Yeah, the minimum applies to basar oath, yes. You said the Taz mentioned it?
Or are we just quoting?
I was just quoting the Taz. It said that Shabbos and Yantar, the minig is to eat basar,
right,
even the Yom HaTfilah.
Right, you're able to eat basar and oaf.
I said oaf?
That's fine. I mean,
I don't think so.
Right.
I don't recall saying that.
Okay.
I didn't intend it, but... Okay. Yeah. Okay. The minhag does extend to chicken. It doesn't apply to fish, but applies to chicken. The post can discuss a tafshil, shinis bashil, and shuman basar and the like, that if you have something that's cooked in inflashik gravy, so there, the Darkei Tshuva quotes that is not a violation of the minhag. That it's mamish meat or even chicken, the minhag applies, but not to something that's cooked in something fleishik or cooked in a fleishik gravy or shuman basar. By the Shulchan writes that also sifkata and kuf pei gimel, based on the gra, that the whole point is what's going to get stuck in a shinayim. Ravadia writes that way, and Ravadia writes that way, that doesn't, if something is has tam fleishiks, that doesn't not beklal the minhag. It's only mamish basar. But anyway, back to the Taz. The Taz says that as far as the minhag, the Mechaber quotes from based on the rush of not eating meat b'yom hatfila, that doesn't apply on Shabbos and Yontif. The minhag wasn't accepted on Shabbos and Yontif, where the norm is to eat meat. Even though there's no chiyuv basar on Shabbos per se, even on Yontif there's no, it's not pasha that there's a chiyuv basar for women. But where that's the norm to eat basar, then the minhag doesn't apply. And the Shari Tefillah quotes from Shlomo Zalman, who had din on Chol HaMoed, that a woman can eat meat on Chol HaMoed, even if Yom HaTefillah is that evening. Purim, that's a discussion in Poskim. What's the level of chiyuv basar on Purim? Ravadia has marma comes from that in both directions, but there is what to rely on Purim as well. that if a woman has a tefillas mitzvah motzai Purim, that she can eat meat at the Purim Suda. Rav Neubert suggests that what's behind this taz is that these are situations where eating meat is a mitzvah or a pseudo mitzvah. The pasuk says pseudo mitzvah also is bechlal, the exception to the minhag. So Rav Neubert says, or at least he suggests, maybe that should apply to matzah on Pesach as well. That you might have said that if we're going to be machmir not to eat foods that get stuck between your teeth, so maybe matzah gets stuck between your teeth, and even if matzah gets stuck between your teeth, then Pesach, where there's a mitzvah, he doesn't say only Leil HaSeder, when obviously that would push off this minhag, even though you're not going to the mikveh after the Seder. So he probably means any day during Pesach, even though it's only kiyum not a chiyuv, kiyum matzah at best, but that's mitzvah food of Pesach, so then he thinks the minhag wouldn't apply, even if you extend the minhag to non-basar foods that get stuck between your teeth. Okay, so the Taz makes his comment over here about minhag number one. The Taz makes a comment about dispensing with the minhag nati meat if it's Shabbos Yontif. That's talking about the minhag nati meat beyond Tfila. What about minhag number two that the Rambam quotes, not to eat anything between rechitza, between the chafifa and tefila? So the Taz applied there as well. Sidrei Tara, Sifkata, and Memtes thinks that you should be machmer on this. That if you go to the mikvah on Friday night, let's say, and you're going to have your suda first. So, well, you shouldn't eat anything. The cave and shusamach l'tfila, shemelo tenakir yafam yitok shem hu l'besa. So it's one thing to be making a minhag one, not to eat meat the whole day prior to the tfila, because then, even if you meet earlier in the day, if it's the sarach mitzvah, Shabbos, yantiv, purim, so then you'll clean your teeth properly before the tfila. But the minhag not to eat anything between the chafif and the tfila, that's a stronger concern. Because if you're in a rush, you're worried you're not going to properly clean your teeth again between your first chafif and the tefila. So the Sudhi Tara thinks that the minhag, that the Ramah quotes, not to eat anything between chafif and tefila, applies on Friday night as well. So says Badi Yashochan, Sifkat and Kuf Peches, and in the Be'urim. However, the Shari Tefila writes that he thinks he could be Mekel in a situation where you're having the Friday night suda before going to the mikvah, where there are guests, where there are kids, where it'll be clear why you're not eating, if you're eating in any setting with other people at the table. And just like we're makel like the Taz when it comes to minhag one, you can be makel like the Taz when it comes to minhag two. And that's what Rav Avadya paskins, that's what Rabbi Willy paskins, and you can be makel on minhag too on Friday night as well. So that's a useful tool in being master leil tefilasa on a Friday night tefillah. One second, Jesse. At least in the summer months, there's a possibility of making Shabbos early. So it makes it easier to be master leil tefilasa if you're going to make Shabbos early, have the suda. And then if you have a relatively short suda, you can eat a suda and finish a suda and then go to the mikvah at the right time after tzeis or at tzeis, if you made Shabbos early and already finished a suda. That's only going to work if you assume that you can be mekel on this minhag not to eat bein chafifa l'tfila on Friday night. But then if you are mekel on that, that is a potential tool to be master leil tefilasa, or otherwise it would be much more difficult when you have kids at home or other people around. Jesse.
Is there any room to say that even if you're allowing someone to eat between chafifa and tefila, they would avoid the food that you shouldn't have eaten the rest of the day? Like maybe you wouldn't want to eat, you know, intense meats that do get stuck in your teeth, or just like once we get rid of it, we got rid of it?
That may be a good idea, meaning to the extent that we're going to be makel to allow someone to eat ben chafifa l'tefila, it should be done with some common sense. So if you think, if the motivation for being mako is to avoid bizayon and that no one should get wind of the fact, so if it's a situation where not eating meat or chicken would clue people into that to that reality, so then you're not gaining anything by not eating the meat or the chicken, but all things being equal, then maybe there's value in refraining if it's not going to make any difference on the mastier chilasa front. Yeah.
Is that, I don't know how the audience has been in terms of like, in terms of flossing and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So if you do it on Shabbos, so then, like, how do all those different things work together? Maybe wouldn't the flash be more? Then wouldn't the meat and chicken flash be more?
Well, you can still floss on Shabbos.
Because you're being more careful.
So you're saying that there's more of a reason to refrain from meat right before tefillah on Friday night. Yeah, so all things being equal is probably correct. But if you're in a situation where it's necessary to eat meat or to not be seen not eating meat, so then in principle you can be makel and just make sure to floss properly afterwards.
There are things you can floss on Shabbos.
You can floss on Shabbos. You can't. You shouldn't cut floss on Shabbos because you pre-cut floss.
But let's say she like bleeds off.
So then that's a different problem. But if the standard, if it's not going to cause any bleeding, you can floss on Shabbos. Okay.
Can I repeat why making early Shabbos during summer would be a helpful thing?
It'll be helpful because if you're going to make Shabbos as well, let's say you have kids at home. So how are you going to orchestrate going to the mikvah without anyone noticing that you're going to the mikvah? Right? So if someone has to stay home with the kids, and if you have kids that are of age that will realize that something's amiss, the mother doesn't usually walk out right after lift bench on Friday night. So it's hard to be master well to be lesson. But if you can make Shabbos early, then husband goes to shul, they have the regular suda, and then after benching, she gets up and goes for a walk and goes to the mikvah, then no one's going to catch on to anything.
Oh, I mean, you wasn't about these 2 minutes hiding.
No. Just, my point was that that's only going to work if you're willing to be mako on both of these menachim.
Couldn't I just wait till they go to sleep?
The mikvah's not open that late, especially Friday night.
Oh, fully barely.
The first Friday night, they open just a small window wherever it needs to go at the beginning of Shabbos. Okay, so let's move on and talk about other chatzitza issues when it comes to teeth. There's a famous comment of the Chachmas Adam that if the Chachmas Adam was accepted at face value, then just about no woman would ever be able to go to the mikvah. And the Chachmas Adam assumes in Klal Kuf Yutes Os Yudches that a permanent filling in the teeth is considered to be a chatzitza. The Chachmas Adam assumes, he writes in the Bina Sadam, that something that's the refua is considered makbin, meaning to distinguish between the sakana of the mortify and the braids and refua, that even if it's there for refua, but ultimately you don't want it there objectively, it's not for the refua purpose, therefore it's considered to be makbin. The Chachmas Adam assumes that a permanent filling is a chatzitza. So if that was the case, then does anyone, any person here who's married, have a wife that doesn't have a single cavity filling? Probably not. I won't take a survey. But I think in the world at large, it's kemat min anima to have someone that doesn't have any fillings. So the Chachmas Adam was to be taken, accepted at face value, then it would be impossible for anyone to ever go to the mikvah. So l'maisa, we have to be mako. And most poskim are mako against the Chachmas Adam. Rav Moshe thinks that even the Chachmas Adam would be mako nowadays. Chelek Aleph, Siman Sadi Zayin, Anaf Vav, that the Chachmas Adam, says Rav Moshe, is talking about a kind of a filling where it's disruptive. Either it causes some pain or it's ugly and it interferes with your normal activities. But if you have something that is concealed, like our cavities, like our fillings, and no one would notice it, it doesn't cause any pain, you don't have any sensation, it doesn't interfere at all, and most of the things that the Chachmas Adam would agree that that's considered to be totally batel as part of the tooth and not considered to be a chatzitza. So whether or not you accept Rav Moshe's analysis of the Chachmas Adam, Well, the nice all the later poskim argue on the Tachma Sadim in practice, and Evan assumes universally that a permanent filling is now considered to be a chatzitza. What about a temporary filling? So that's more of a discussion in poskim. That's a little bit less clear. Ramosha assumes in the same tshuva that a temporary filling is also not a chatzitza, because even if you're going to remove the temporary filling to replace it with a permanent filling, but there will always be something there filling up the cavity or whatever hole the filling is filling up. So as opposed to a ring, which is considered to be a chatzitza, because there are situations where you're going to remove the ring and the finger will be exposed. But here, you'll never have a situation where the temporary filling is removed and isn't replaced with anything afterwards. Plus, this is Beis HaSarim, and you could be makel like those we showed on the Beis HaSarim is only the Rabbanon. So Ramosha thinks, without putting a time limit, as we'll see other posts can do, that in Ramosha, it sounds like any temporary filling, regardless of the amount of time that the filling is going to be there, but a temporary filling is something that's going to be replaced by a permanent filling afterwards. So that would not constitute a chatzitza in the map. That's Ramosha's position. That's the Tzvi, Pesach Frank's position. Shuvas Har Tzvi, Yoredei Akuf Samach Tes. Shuvas Har Tzvi, Yoredei Akuf Samach Tes. In the end of the Sefer Mari Korin, Rabbi Rubin, he has a tshuva from Chaim Kanievsky, quoting from the Chazon Ish, that the Chazon Ish was machmir on temporary cavities, temporary fillings, without further elaboration or qualification in that brief citation. But many other poskim of the last generation talk about the length of time in which a temporary filling needs to be there in order for us to be comfortable allowing tefillah. Rav Eliashiv in Kovetz Tshuvos Chelek Aleph Simen Sadi, Chelek Aleph Simen Sadi, tshuva written in 1968 to Rabbi Sinai Adler, who was a Rosh Kol Mevaseret for many years, a child survivor. Anyone ever hear from him? I think he wrote a book about his experiences in the war. So Rav Eliashiv wrote a tshuva to him. He entertains, he doesn't endorse, but he discusses, as we had discussed previously in the context of stitches, whether 7 days would be a relevant shear for permanence for a temporary fill-in, like Keshe Shel Kiyama of 7 days for Shabbos. But in practice, many poskim embrace 30 days as being the cutoff, at which point we would be comfortable allowing a woman to go to the mikvah with a temporary filling. So the Shari Tefila, Tim Lamed Aleph, quotes from Reb Shlomo Zalman that if you have, and I think there's a tshuva from Reb Shlomo Zalman, the end of Sefer Mari Cohen, makes a point that if you have a temporary filling that's going to be there for 30 days, then just like 30 days is a shear for Kesher Shel Kayama, and 30 days may be relevant in making this halachically permanent and allowing you to go to the mikvah with such a filling. Shlomo Zalman said, as quoted there, that in Ikradin, the 30 days could be counted from the day that the filling is put in. But he thinks he should be machmir, that it should be 30 days from the day of the tefillah. Meaning, if you're going to the mikvah and the temporary filling is going to be there for another 30 days, so then that is kavu enough that it's not considered to be close, it's not considered to be makbid. But the Shari Tefillah writes over there that you could do the following trick. You can tell the women should be under the impression that the filling is going to be there for another 30 days. But the rabbi can whisper in the husband's ear that once she goes to the mikvah, then it's okay if it's removed earlier. Because the point is, her mindset has to be that it's going to be there for 30 days. That makes it in a makbid, even if in reality, it'll be removed earlier. In the Piskei Das, Rabbi Morgenstern quotes, Pei Shin Sadi Aleph, that Rav Eliashiv in practice also had this 30-day marker. And that's the Badei Shulchan Paskins in Sifkatan Kuf Ayin Tes. That's where Rav Ozner writes. The Rosh Turmbach has the following qualification. Shuvas van Hagos Chelik Aleph Simin Tav Kuf Ches. Shuvas van Hagos Chelik Aleph Simin Tav Kuf Ches Os Lamed Aleph. That we talk about 30 days, it means that it has to be medically indicated that it needs to be there for 30 days. If it's just that, it could be medically removed after 2 weeks, but the doctor wants to go on a vacation and he's not going to be available to remove it till after 30 days. That doesn't make it permanent enough for purposes of payda. It has to be something that medically needs to be there for 30 days. Again, Ramosha doesn't sound like he has a particular time marker for how long it has to be there. Neither does Rav Avadya, but Rav Shlomo Rav Yoshev, and the Baal Shulchan have 30 days as being operative. And therefore, if a woman is going to have a temporary filling and it's going to be removed within less than 30 days, then all things being equal, a woman should, according to those posts, postpone her tefillah. The Shari Tefillah says, depending on circumstances and maybe what you rely on, if it's going to be at least 7 days, and that would be a case-by-case analysis. Rav Shlomo Zalman has another ha'ara that is quoted in Shulchan Shlomo, the Shulchan Shlomo on Refuah, Volume 3, page Yud Tes, that if you had some kind of, if you had a filling, and there's some chip in the filling or something that needs to be rectified, so there, and that kind of a filling, that would be a problem with chatzitza because it's not going to stay there in its current state. The woman is makpedes because it's not the way it's supposed to be. That has to be fixed. That would be a problem. Okay. Possum also discussed braces. I think nowadays most people that get braces get them in their teenage years and they're out by the time they get married, generally speaking. But the Possum discussed whether braces are considered to be a chatzitza. Minchas Yitzchak, Chelik Vav, Simen Pei Vav. Chelik Vav, Simen Pei Vav. He thinks that there's what to be makel about if it's not going anywhere for a long period of time and it's medically necessary. So that's considered Eina Makbid. Ramosha is not so convinced about the Kapeda calculation. Chelik Aleph Simen Sadi Vav. Chelik Aleph Simen Sadi Vav. He says the Shoel said it's not considered to be Makbid. Says Ramosha, Kasha Lismachosa. Kevin de Belot Sore, Chaisa Makpedes, Shelo Yeze Al Shina. All things being equal, she'd rather not be there. Kevin Zhurak Miut, Begambe Sastarim, Shalahar Beshitas, Rakmi de Rabbanon, Trade Rabbanon, Erosa Lahakel. Ulai ein limchos biyada. But he's not so excited. Now, Ramosha there may be working with the assumption that the braces are being inserted for cosmetic purposes and not for medical purposes. That's what the Shari Tefillah discusses. And maybe one would distinguish between where there's a medical need and where it's for cosmetic purposes. If it's for cosmetic purposes, it's harder to be makel because right now it's ugly. So you're putting in the braces to have straighter teeth down the road, but right now it's mechur. But that's not lanoi, as opposed to if it's lerefuah. So he quotes from Rav Yashiv as well. However, Rav Avadya writes, even Lanoi, you could be makel, because you have no intention of removing it. There's no way you could remove it. You have no intention of removing it. It's considered to be Eino Makrid for that reason. That's what it sounds like in Shevet Levi Chelug Yud Simen Kuf Nun. And Ravadi also writes that it's a fine line between that which is medically indicated and that which is for cosmetic purposes. Even that which ostensibly is for cosmetic purposes has a medical value as well. That's what Dr. Halperin wrote an article in Asi after Shlomo Zalman passed away, which is a summary of different psukim from Shlomo Zalman on medical issues. So Asya, this is in Sefer Asya Yud Beis. He quotes from Reb Shlomo Zalman that, actually, he quotes from Reb Neuberg, sorry, that according to the orthodontist, the dentist, that even where ostensibly it's for cosmetic purposes, there's a medical need as well. So you never have something, you never have a situation where braces are put in just for cosmetic reasons alone in a vacuum. Gabe, you had a question?
Moshe himself wasn't
mechalik before. And, you know? I don't think he's mechalik explicitly, or that's just the sense you get from his presentation.
I don't know he did about it.
I don't know if he's explicit. He does seem to make that distinction, because what his objections are on the grounds that, or with the assumption that there's no medical need. I just don't remember if he wrote that specifically. But that is what he's saying. Okay. Possum also discussed dentures. So if it's a permanent denture,
is it just the mice?
If the braces are there permanently and they're not coming out anytime soon, we're making them. All things being equal, if you're going to get braces, better to get them when you're 14 and not wait till you're 21. The dentures, supposed to assume that permanent dentures or permanent false teeth that you can't remove, they're definitely not potates. Even the Chachmas Adam is makel about that. That's better than a filling for the Chachmas Adam. If you have dentures that are removed every night, so then the consensus of poskim is that is a patitza, like a ring. Just like you remove the ring at regular intervals, that's a patitza. You remove the dentures at a regular interval, that's a patitza. So you'd have to remove the dentures in advance of tevila. The Shari Tevila in Simon Lama Beis quotes from Shlomo Zalman that he thinks that even dentures that you remove every night aren't chotzeitz, and the chachili should remove them. But if you forgot to, they're not chotzeitz, because the reason you remove them is to clean them. As even your regular teeth, if you could remove them to clean them, you would. Just we can't take our teeth out. But there's nothing fundamentally different between dentures that you're taking out to clean and your regular teeth. That's what he quotes from Reb Shlomo Zalman. Okay. Let's go back now to Shulchan Aruch and Sif Kaf Hei, which we referenced at the beginning of the shir. Mechaber writes, "Im lo hidicha beis astarim ubeis hakamatim shala, v'nimsa behem davar chotzeitz, lo also latvila." That Rava said a woman should be madicha kmataha beis astarim. If she didn't do it, and you found the davar chotzeitz, tvila doesn't count. V'im lo nimsa la davar chotzeitz, but if you neglected to rinse out the base of starim, to wash out the base of starim beforehand, and afterwards you looked and you found there was no davar chotzeit, the tefila b'di'evid was a good tefila. The ain adama l'bdikas of chavivas rosh. As opposed to if you didn't do chavif at all, then even if there's no davar chotzeit, it is ma'akev, because that's required midina. Here, this is a l'chachila, but it's not ma'akev if there's no tatsitsa after the fact. That's based on the Ravid in Bali Nefesh that we referenced earlier. However, the Shach writes in, actually, let's see Kavav, And then in lo baka kodem tefila bein shinah v'lo beis hasarim shela. The acher tefila na'ami lo baka. But let's say she didn't do bedikah beforehand and she didn't check immediately afterwards. Ashenis aska b'ksamim v'tafshilin. And then she was touching stuff that could have created a chatzitza. Even if you were in Madicha beforehand, and you didn't check immediately afterwards, and then you found the chatzitza, but in the interim you're oseg in something that could have created that chatzitza, so then you could be mekel as well and be toled the davar chotzeis on your hisaskus post tefillah. So that's all based on this ravid that madicha beis kmatah beis hasarim is a lechachila, but it's not a formal requirement that's going to be ma'akev b'di eved like chafifa. Says the shaf in sifkat elam gimel v'das harokech ein okein shakas v'simin shen yutas matzasi ma'is v'isha shetavla v'nimsa basar bein shineha v'tzrichu tefila acheres. Assumes that the same din applies not only if a woman didn't do chafifa, but even if she didn't do the hadacha beis hasarim, and then she found the davar chotzeis in the beis hasarim after she was osekes be also a min or something that could have created the chatzitza post facto, still you should be machmir to require another tefila. And that's what he thinks. You see from the Maisa Shapasa Sharabi, there also that was a safek. Maybe the etzem came after the fact, and yet they were machmir. Says the Sidrei Taras of Kata Nun Beis that you should be machmir like the shach, even though at the end of the day we're talking about a safek ana derabanan. Nevertheless, in Hilchos Nida, you find sometimes that we tend to be machmir even with the eved on safek derabanan, even if in other areas of halacha on a safek derabanan we would be mekum. And the Aruch HaShulchan writes as well in Osn and Zion that you should be machmir this: if a woman didn't clean the beis hasarim and then she found the derech chosek afterwards, even if she was this aska be osamin, the chachili should do another tefila. And the Rav Avadya writes that the Sfardim don't have such, they're not bothered by the shach. The Sfardim go straight like the Mechaber, and you don't have to ask any further questions. Gabe.
This is the only machmir she actually finds, but we're not machmir on the first.
Correct. Okay. Then the Mechaber. Yeah, then the Mechaber has in Siv Zion, Nasna Sa'ara Bifia, Okarsa Siv Saseha, Okafsa Yadeha, Yada, Binyan Shalaba, Mayim Behem, Lo also Latfila. So Okarsa Siv Saseha, we had discussed earlier, but the first in here, also based on Mishnah Mikvah's Perichas Mishnah Hay, is that if a woman had her hair in her mouth, then that is a major Chatzitza problem, because the hair requires bias mayim, not just right the bias mayim. So even if you hide the hair in a base of starim, that doesn't give the din of a base of starim. So if you're going to be going to the mikvah while chewing your hair, that is a problem. Okay. And then we have the din of karsis of saseha that we already discussed earlier. The 2 days in the rash in mikvahs doesn't mean karsis of saseha bioser, dochekas saseha bioser, or even a medium position, and we assume like the second day in the Rash, which is the Rash's only day in Perek Yud, that Karsus of Sasev Biyoser means in a clamped down position of Dochekes Svaseha Biyoser. But we assume, not like the Agot Sharidura, that a woman does not need to have her mouth open when she goes to the mikvah. She could have it closed in a relaxed fashion. Rakim Moshe quote Hagos Shari Dura, not that way, that you have to have the mouth open a little bit. And we don't assume that way. We're not kosher for that lalacha, because we assume, like the second reason of the Rash, that Karsus of Sasev means Beoser. And anything short of that, so the default position that a woman normally has her mouth closed in, is not a problem. And that is the standard position. When you go to the mikvah, you close your mouth, As long as it's not shut tight. Yeah.
And the chat in that rash was because it's a chatzitza on the lips being put. Nothing to do with the driver's star.
If it's dochekes vaseha biyoser, so then it's the problem on the outside, like Rashi, correct? The problem is that the basar, you're going to clamp down your lip, so then you're making kmatim on the outside of the lip, correct? Okay. Pisket Shuva quotes in Tifkatan Yud Zayin from the Chamudah Daniel again. Im karsa shineha la de chatzitza. That if she clenches her teeth, that's not considered to be a chatzitza. So to close the mouth in an abnormally tight fashion would be a problem, because then you're creating kmatim or wrinkles are on the outside of the mouth in an area that's not beis hastarim. But come with it, Neil says, clenching your teeth would not be a problem. And that's precisely the difference. As Rabbi Forth explains, that if you're clenching your teeth, that's within the mouth. And there's no change in the teeth, and there's no change in the physical presentation, as opposed to if your parts are sabiyoser, then you're creating the kmatim on the outside. Bali Shulchan thinks, Reshit Aleph for the Lechem Asimla, that you should be machmir, even on clenching teeth. Because maybe you have to be choshesh for the first reason of the rash, that it's not just worried about kamatim on the outside, but if you're closing your mouth, it's not really the bsmaim on the inside. And the same thing would be true by krisas shinayim. But I'm not sure, meaning if you're to be choshesh for the first reason of the rash, then you should be machmir to leave your mouth open for tefillah also. And that he doesn't say. I'm not sure. I'm going to try to split that. We can take a look at Sifkatan Reish Yud Aleph. Okay. Then Sifkaf Kas, we have the first application of the Din of Mayim Makdimin that we had discussed briefly previously, that if a woman needs assistance going into the mikvah, that's the din of Mayim Akdimin. Shach thinks it has to be dafka b'may mikva, not b'mayim tlushim. Shach in Sifkat Lamed Zayin. So if a woman needs assistance and going to the mikvah, so the din of Mayim Akdimin, just like it's relevant for Tfilas Kalim, relevant for Tfilas Nashim, that if you wet your hands in the mikvah and then assist the woman going down, so at whatever point you're touching her, you already had mayim akdimin on your hands, and that's not going to be a chatzitza. And the Rabbi Forth suggests that if you're in that situation, it may even be better if you could touch her at two different points, not at the same time, so that while she's in the mikvah, you're holding her at one point and then another point, so she'll... there won't be any part in her body that wasn't totally exposed to the main lip at some point during a tefillah. Okay. And then the next application of Mayim Akdimin is this is very lamaisa for all women in Sif Lamed. Ein Otsricha Lag Bia Ragla B'Shas Tefilasa Im Ein Sham Tit Alfa Bisha Deresis Ala Ritzba. So a woman goes to the mikvah, she doesn't have to jump up and jump with her feet off the ground so that she's submerging herself without her feet touching the ground. Because when a woman goes into the mikvah, or a man for that matter, when anyone goes into the mikvah in the normal positioning, so the water is going to be makdimin on the bottom of the feet. And then it doesn't make a difference that by the time the head submerged, the feet are touching the bottom, as long as there's no tit or nothing that's going to create a chatzitza on the feet, then the din of mayim makdimim allows you to go to the mikvah without having to jump up to have your feet off the ground. Okay, then Sif Lamed Aleph, we have the din of tefillah b'kelim. So that's the Gemara on the bottom of the Samach Vav Amud Beis. There are two issues that the Gemara raises, both of which are lahalacha. One of them is that tefillah b'kelim may be a concern of Zeras Merchatzos. And number two, a matter of the Asusa. But that this isn't really a very lemaisa matter. So that's Sif Lamed Aleph here. There's a long taz. But we're not going to spend time on this because it's not that lemaisa. The Gemara, the next line on the bottom of Samach Vav Amud Beis has the din of Namal. Amar Rishmol Bar Yitzhak Isha La Titbal Bin Namal Anta Samach Zayin Amin Aleph. Rashi says port in second gate. Malkan Shesfinos Dik Baos Shemalos Tit V'Chotzitz. What's the problem of going to being Tovelas in a port? Rashi says the problem is that there is a lot of tit that's around. That potentially could be a chatzitza. And the Rebbeinu Tam assumes that's nothing to do with the physical reality of that body of water. The problem is the location, that if you're going to the mikvah in a public area, then the woman's going to be embarrassed to be tovelis in a public area, and she's going to rush through the tefillah and not be properly midakdekes in the details of tefillah. But says Rebbeinu Tam, Bidi Eved, the tefillah would be a good tefillah, as long as she was properly makpedes for all the details. And the Darkei Moshe, Kosev Beni Rucham, we accept both of these concerns of Namal are relevant halacha, both the tit concern and the public concern of Busha Meheres. Darkei Moshe, Kosev Beni Rucham, the same concern is true. Rebbeinu Tam expressed it in the context of a public tefillah. But it's also relevant if it's in a dangerous area. So the mikvah is in the middle of South Central LA. And right, is that the Van Everett?
Yeah.
And you're afraid to go there any longer than you need to be, so you're going to rush in order to get out as quickly as possible. So the same concern. If you have a mikvah situated in a dangerous area, then that's not a lechachila because we're worried a woman's going to rush through her tefillah. So that's what it says here in Shulchan Aruch, that we accept both reasons, both concerns in Sif. Lamed Gimel is a titbal, but Malcolm Shiesh Bekarki so tit. So you shouldn't go to the mikvah in a place where there's tit on the bottom, because that's going to create chatzitza problems, unless you're going to put something down, a kind of a mat that has to be in a makabel tumah. It's not going to prevent the tefillah. And then Lama Dalit, that's Rashi's reason. And Lama Dalit is Tosus' reason. So the first case, Rashi's concern of Chatzitza, that then even Bidiyavit the Tefillah may not be a good Tefillah, that's 2 days in Shulchan Aruch. When it comes to the Rebbeinu Tam's concern of Busha or rushing the Tefillah, so as long as you did the Tefillah properly, Bidiyavit, the tefillah would be a good tefillah. Yeah, Gabe, what do you want to say?
Just going back to Lamed Aleph, about the tefillah of Kalim.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of people there who shout out about like the building of mikvahs.
Right.
The floors, like whether the floors could have. So I just was wondering about like modern mikvahs. We like avoid the whole issue. I mean, they were thinking about whether you had like, I think like wooden, like.
Yeah, right. So none of that, none of that comes up in our mikvahs.
What's this for the floors? I mean, it's just made of like stone. Like tiles,
yeah.
All of them are like tiles, I think.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Okay.
Okay. The Baal Yeshulchan quotes here in Beis Samach Vav, discussions in Achronim, what other scenarios does this concern of Rabbeinu Tam apply to that we're worried the woman's gonna rush her tefillah? They quote Achronim to talk about the Darkei Teshuva has. If you have a mikveh that's infested with frogs, most women probably don't want to spend too much time with frogs. So that's also a concern that they may come to rush the tefillah. The Baalei Shulchan says you have to have a Goldilocks mikveh. It can't be too hot or too cold. It has to be just the right temperature. Otherwise, if it's too hot or too cold, then the woman may come to rush her tefillah. Divrei Malkiel, Chelik Beis Siman Nun Ches, says it shouldn't be too deep. If a woman's scared of deep water, then she may come to rush her tefillah as well. So mikveh should be as pleasant and inviting as possible to avoid these concerns that a woman may rush her tefillah if it's not a conducive, inviting, comfortable environment. Okay. So let's stop here. And Mirtz Hashem, next time we'll finish up the siman, just highlights of the rest of the siman. And then we will move to siman reish, which is Berchas Tefillah. So we'll see if we can finish that all up next time, or at least most of that next time. And then let's see what the calendar looks like.